Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
The boxers have been given their instructions. The seconds are out. The crowd is ready for another edition of Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing with your presenter, the boxing historian, Greg Rashid.
And I want to say Swati Kop to everyone out there. Swati Kop means hello and Thai if you're new to the program. This is Greg Rashid, your presenter for another edition of the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. So many people I want to thank out there. I just don't have the time, but there are people all over the world that have been listening to the program. I want to say hi to my new friends in the Philippines, getting a lot of love from the Philippines, as well as in Myanmar, Morocco, and of course in the U.S. And I want to say special hi to the folks who listen every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Mountain Time on KUHSDenver.com, created by the one and only, the legendary Henry Archuleta. But for so many of people out there, they listen at the convenience on various platforms on the internet, be it at my YouTube channel, Nourished by History. Also, people listen at Sports History Network and listen on Twitter, on Apple, so many places. I just want to thank all of you that are doing that out there. And I want to ask you again to please, if you want to be a promoter of the program, and you have so many folks that promote the program, just give me a holler at the various platforms that you listen to the program at. Also, you can go to my Patreon site, look for Nourished by History, then look for Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast, and consider donating $1 a month, whatever you can. It really helps. It keeps the lights on here. Gives me a better microphone, just a little bit of everything. Also, you can go to my buymeacoffee.com site, look for Nourished by History, then look for Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast and donate whatever you can. It is really helpful. But today, as I always say, we do our simulated boxing fights on here, but also we talk about real boxing, what's going on in the real world. And what I'm going to do today, this is going to be the first of two parts. You're going to hear a great interview with the author, boxing historian, William Detlow. He's authored a current book right now called Boxing's Miracle Man, Matthew Saad Muhammad. So we're going to get right to the interview now on the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. So let's hear that right now. Okay, I am so honored today to have on this program a world-renowned boxing historian, writer, former editor of Ring Magazine, one of my favorite magazines from way back when, current author, editor of the Ringside Seat magazine, great magazine, love it, all about boxing, which everyone who knows or listens to the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast obviously knows my love of boxing. What I'm talking about today is William Detlow, who's written a superb book on Matthew Saad Muhammad. The book is titled Boxing's Miracle Man. It's on McFarland Press. And I just want to say thank you so much for writing that book, and thank you for being on today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure, Greg.
You know, and I got to say this. I fell in love with Matthew when he was fighting, obviously, in the 70s, seeing it on free TV, on ABC, sure. Wide World of Sports on Saturday afternoon, seeing his fights as light heavyweight champion. And even prior to that, when he was, you know, the North American light heavyweight champion. But, you know, this book, one thing, I have to say this, I knew a lot about him, but I learned so much in the book. And it actually, I have to say this, it's the first boxing book and maybe the first sports book that I actually started sobbing about. I mean, his story I thought I knew, but it just made me feel so one moment elated and one minute so sad. And actually started, I was tearing up just reading about him. And you just have done an incredible job of, in just a short, you know, the book is not a big book, but you did a great job of just illuminating his life, who this guy was, and also the surroundings that led to what he became and where he came from. And I just want to commend you for that. I mean, that was incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Greg. I think the highest compliment a writer can receive is being told that his work moved a reader, and made him or her feel something. So I appreciate that. But I think in just about any writer's hands, Matthew's story would elicit that kind of response. Just from the nature of the story, which you know now, it's at once elating in parts and terribly sad in other parts. So again, thanks for the compliment, but his story kind of made it easy, I think, or makes it easy to elicit that kind of response from readers.
Yeah, I couldn't, you know, I do some writing, but I couldn't write a book like that. That's the way you did it. And I'm curious, before we start talking more about the book, what is it about writers, boxing writers, like yourself and so many other folks, Burt Sugar in the past, and, you know, so many folks, Gerald Early, they write unlike others. And I, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong. They write with a different passion and bring out the emotions of the athletes that I would say other sports, baseball, football, tennis, you name it, hockey, don't bring out. And what is that? Because it's something you couldn't just get a sports writer at a newspaper and say, oh, just write about boxing. Okay, now write about football. It's a different breed that writes that stylish way that's very, very poetic. And what is that? Where does that come from?
Well, I think that's a really good observation. I think it's a couple of things. I think, A, that writers in general are solitary people, right, to a large degree.
Right.
And boxers are. And I mean, even though they have many times when they're doing well, lots of friends around and that kind of thing, it's a solitary sport because so much of their training is done alone, like when they're running. And of course, they're alone in the ring, except for an opponent. So fighters are solitary people a lot of the time, whether they think they are or not. And writers are too. So I think writers are drawn to boxing in that way. And I think it's also because the stakes are so high in boxing. It makes it writers have to speak with a different voice, or write with a different voice, I should say, right, when they're writing about boxing. Because it's so different from other sports. You know, the stakes aren't as high in other sports. Even in a one-on-one sport like tennis, the likelihood that somebody's going to get killed in tennis is, you know, nil. And for the most part, it is in boxing too, but it's never out of the question. Guys get killed in the ring all the time and get damaged. Sometimes they don't notice the damage or others don't for a long time. But I think it's probably there's a quote in there from my friend and mentor and longtime editor Nigel Collins about Matthew Saad Muhammad's first fight with Marvin Johnson, and he wrote that it was the, and you remember this, I'm sure, because it's a great quote. It was the only fight he'd ever covered where he thought both guys might die.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. How brutal the fight was, and I think it's those kinds of stakes that really bring out the best in writers, who are already, again, drawn to boxing because of its solitary nature. So that's kind of a guess, but that's as close as I can come to the break. But it's a really good observation.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really something. The closest I see as far as that type of writing, as far as athletics, is some of the writing I've seen about hockey goalies. It's it's kind of the same type of writing. That's, you know, because they're taking a big punishment. And also, I see it over here, too.
Sure.
I see it over here with many of the Muay Thai fighters over here. The writings about, you know, mm-hmm. the things that get translated about Muay Thai fighting. The same style, the poetic, you know, talking about 400 years ago of fighting all and all that. And I also have seen that writing, that style of writing, and I've read about gladiators in Rome and reading old, you know, things that people like Plato, Socrates were saying about gladiators. And it's just fascinating. So you're just part of that great tradition of great, I mean, just superb writers. And I'm just so happy to have you on here
I
today.
Appreciate
it is really, you know, it's just really a superb book. And for those who just tuning in, I'm talking to William Detloff, author of the book Boxing's Miracle Man, Matthew Saad Muhammad. It's on McFarland Press. Please get it. So tell me a little more, because you talk about in the book how you kind of got into him as a teenager, but what was it like the deciding factor that said, you know, I got to write a book about this guy? What was it?
Well, I'm drawn to, in terms of writing, I'm drawn to darkness and tragedy and that kind of thing. It speaks to me. I don't know why, but I'm drawn to those stories. And having read the book, you know Matt's personal story, right? So his personal story alone needed to be told or retold, I think. And then when you couple that with what he did in boxing and how he did it, makes it an irresistible story in my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's been this long until his story was told in this way. You know, he was covered in magazines and in the ring back in the 70s, very capably by Nigel Collins and others. But it's always surprised me that not only that nobody had written a book until the last year or two, but also that there was never a film made about it, because the story is just full of
That's what gets me.
Thanks.
I mean, the story is there. It's there to be written. It's a Holly, you know, I always call it Holly Weird, but Holly Weird, Hollywood, that's a perfect story. And, you know, I like the first Rocky movie. That's fine. But when you're making movies like Cinderella Man about James J. Braddock and all that, I can't relate to that. I mean, come on now. You've got this guy.
Why's that?
In this era, you know, in the late 20th century, then, you know, in the 70s and 80s and all, still around in the 21st century. And you can't write about, you know, make a movie about him. I mean, what is your opinion of that? Why a movie was not made? And maybe your book will cause someone to make a movie. But why do you think that has been the case?
Well, I should say that as I wrote in the book, there were some talks a couple of times with Matt about making a film of his life story. And it never happened. And in fact, he and his people were getting kind of scammed for a while by some folks who were telling him that they were going to make his story into a film. My personal opinion, and I can't really substantiate this, but my personal opinion is that in the 80s and even shortly thereafter, I think it didn't happen because I don't think that, I think America wasn't ready for a second American Muslim hero. That's my own personal opinion.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
The American sporting public accepted Muhammad Ali eventually, right? And grudgingly, because you were around, you know how it was early with Ali. He was hated,
Even prior, I can tell you this, as a little kid, he was hated prior to what his stance on the Vietnam War.
Sure.
And I'm talking about, I lived in D.C., Washington, D.C., growing up in Washington, D.C., and there were older black men and some kids my age in elementary school who didn't like him because they thought he was too cocky. They thought he was this. And once he took his stance against the Vietnam War, I mean, there are a lot of black folks who were opposed to him, who didn't like him.
Right.
And let alone the general population, a lot of white folks who didn't like him. And so it's so weird for me, as you know, you see this now, that all these folks that just like praise him and talk about him, it's like, you know, where were you? And I look at the ages of some of these people, I said, where were you back in the 60s and 70s?
Right.
How come you
weren't? I agree.
It's just fascinating. And I have to say
this,
I agree with you as far as that's probably the main reason why a movie has not been made. Also, as I was reading your book, and this is going to be a weird analogy, maybe, but your book, I started thinking about, I was reading it about Matthew. And the book reminded me, his story reminded me so much of, even though this guy had a moment of fame, the book I read a couple of years ago about Frank Willis, the hero of Watergate. It
Ah,
was
interesting. Okay.
the same pattern, but
Huh.
unlike him, you know, he's a security guard that finds the Watergate burglars and all that, but he has this moment of fame where he has all these hustlers around him, like
Sure.
Saad Muhammad, trying to get a movie deal, trying to get a book.
Yeah.
And he has a little bit of money for a minute. The next thing you know, the elite just leave him when the money's
Yeah.
not coming in. And the same, and I see the same, and I saw the same pattern with Saad Muhammad. And I look, if you, when we are done with this interview, if you got time, take a look at a picture of Frank Willis. And then
I
look at
will.
Saad. They look alike.
Do that. I'll do that. I want to read the book now too.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's like, it's very odd, but they look, they have the same look in their eyes. I don't know, the sadness from their life or what, but they have that same look.
Huh, that's interesting. Well, it's not uncommon, of course, in sports and especially in boxing, where when the money's coming in and you're winning, you got tons of friends. Everybody's
Yeah.
there to have everybody's to party. Everybody's there to have a good time. And once the good times end, so do the friendships, and they're gone. That's repeated in I'm sure many other vocations besides boxing
Oh
and
yeah.
other sports. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't want you really to give the whole story of Matthew today because I want people to get the book. I want them to get that book. I want to just do a teaser here, but and I want them to go online and look at some of the fights that they've never seen him. And
Yeah.
you know, first of all, tell listeners what fight would you recommend? I have my opinion. I think I agree with you what you said in the book. What two fights would you recommend if someone who's like listening to this now and saying, Matthew Saad Muhammad, who's that? I never heard of this guy. You know, he who
Yeah.
is he? What would you recommend?
I think the fight that people most associate with Matthew Saad Muhammad is the second Yaki Lopez fight.
Yeah.
That's really, I think, that one that sticks in the memories of most fight fans, because the beating that he took, and at one point in particular, it wouldn't even occurred in today's sport because it would have been stopped in Yaki Lopez's favor. I think that's the one. That's the second one where Matthew came back from a really hellacious beating and won, which was his pattern, of course. But my favorite one, which I think shows Matt at his best, took place long before that, and that was his fight against Richie Gates,
Oh,
who was
yeah.
a very good light heavyweight, and they fought in Philadelphia in a fight that it's difficult to put into words how good it was. They were both young and very fresh, and Matthew especially hadn't come into money yet, and hadn't taken a lot of bad beatings yet, and I think was at the very top of his game when he stepped up to fight Richie Gates, who was again a very, very good light heavyweight. And that fight is on YouTube,
Yeah.
as are most of his fights after some point. And so
You
if I was going to introduce a fighter to a person to Matthew Saad Muhammad, I'd say start with the Richie Gates fight.
yeah, and Case just he just passed last year. He was
Yeah,
around
so you
quite
understand
a
what you do. She
yeah,
was.
and he's one of these guys like Yaki Lopez, who in another era would have been light heavyweight champion. I mean, they were that good. That was the
Yeah.
golden, as you say in the book, the golden age of light heavyweights. It was just incredible.
It certainly was. There were so many good fighters at 175 in that era. And that's really that contributed to Matt's success and his story too, right? Everybody's a product of the age they live in, right? And Matt was too, in terms of the quality of the light heavyweight division during that time. And the really great thing was that all these guys who probably would have been champions in other eras, they all fought each other, and
Yeah.
multiple times. They fought each other and they fought multiple times. Matt fought Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Marvin Johnson twice, Yaki Lopez twice, and Dwight Muhammad Cowie twice. Right? Michael Spinks, yeah, Michael Spinks, who was like the end of the era, of that era, fought Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Marvin Johnson, Yaki Lopez, and Dwight Muhammad Cowboy. Lopez was the toughest of anybody, not the toughest, but he was willing to fight anybody. Yaki Lopez fought Victor Galindez twice, Matthew Saad Muhammad twice, James Scott, and Michael Spinks.
Right,
so these guys, yeah, they just all fought each other repeatedly, and they were all really top fighters who would have been champions for a long time in era.
They would have been. They would have definitely been champions of great fighters. And Yaki's still with us. Yaki and Marvin Johnson, they're still around. They're still with us.
They are. They are. And I love to point to those guys as examples of the good things that boxing can do for people. You know, we tend to, and I said earlier that I was drawn to dark stories, but I need to be reminded too sometimes, as we all do, that there's lots of heartbreak in boxing, but there's lots of triumph too. Yaki's living a very good life. He's got all those senses of, he's got a good family around him, and he's living the life. And same with Marvin Johnson. And Richie Cates had a good life too for a long time. So a lot of these guys, things end badly, and certainly they did for Matthew. But boxing helps, in my view, many more than it hurts.
I agree with that. And something you mentioned in the book, too, is that something that's really missing in a lot. And I can't, over here, you can go down the street here in Bangkok, you'll see a Muay Thai gym on a corner. But in America, and especially I can say in D.C., where I grew up in, Philly, New York, you just name major metropolitan areas. There was a boxing gym everywhere.
Yep.
And that's not the same now. And talk about, you know, Juniper Gym, the importance of the Juniper Gym for Saad Muhammad.
Yeah, the Juniper Gym was a little, roundy little boxing gym in South Philly that you probably wouldn't even know was a gym if you weren't privy to what was going on inside. And that's the best boxing gyms, right? The best boxing gyms that have ever been have been little tiny places in the middle of ghettos, slums, right? Because the real fighters are drawn to them. And that's where Matthew first started boxing, under tutelage of the proprietor there. And there were a lot of great fighters, not only that went to that gym, but in the 20 other gyms right in Philadelphia. There were gyms in South Philly and right over the river in Jersey by the dozens. I think I write in the book that you could throw a rock in any, you could stand on a street corner or throw a rock in any direction and hit a gym.
Yeah.
Because there were so many kids at that time who needed something, right? Like boxing. And the gyms were everywhere and boxing was everywhere in that period. So we're talking about, you know, the early 70s, late 60s. It was a totally different sport, I should say, and a totally different culture at that time as compared to now, where there are just so many different options for people in terms of entertainment and sports that didn't exist then. Boxing was huge in Philadelphia. There were just gyms everywhere.
Yeah, just like in D.C., you know, the whole East Coast.
Yes. I mean,
and then the absolutely. West Coast, L.A. and San Francisco, big there. Really
or
big.
In the middle, too. Yeah, but in the middle, too, in Detroit. In Miami, in Chicago, and everywhere in between. Maybe not the Midwest too much, right? But all those metropolitan areas were filled with gyms, and they were all filled with hungry young fighters.
Right.
But especially.
And I can't actually leave out Ohio, because the book you wrote previously, I mean, we were talking about the Cincinnati Cobra, the one and only Peter Charles. And that's a great book, too, by the way. So let's just pick that one up, too. And that's a great one, too. Another sad one, but another, I mean, it's a heroic, very heroic. But as far as the book we're talking about today about Saad Muhammad, I was wondering, you know, as I was reading the book and then going back and looking at some of the videos, I was trying to figure out a fighter right now who approaches or has Saad Muhammad's style. And I know, you know, I know in the past you could say somebody like Arturo Gatti, but right now, I mean, at this moment,
most people think.
Yeah.
There is a guy that In Ringside Seat magazine, there's a guy that Eric Raskin, in his feature, just wrote is probably the most exciting fighter in the world. And his name is Matias. His last name is Matias. And let me just bring him up real quick, because I want to make sure that I'm doing him justice and pronouncing his name correctly. It's Subriel Matias, or Matias. He's a Puerto Rican kid who's a very good fighter and very exciting. And like Saab, doesn't have a lot of time to worry about defense, right? And is a hard puncher. It's very exciting. But all these guys, over the decades since Matt fought, there have been a lot of guys kind of like that who were exciting for a brief period in time. And most of the fans today will point to a guy like Gotti, right? Who was very good and very exciting, but it really wasn't in Saad Muhammad's league as a fighter.
No.
Right?
No.
Gotti was a fun guy, but whenever he stepped up against a good fighter, he got beat. And meanwhile, Saad Muhammad was the champion of the world and made a lot of title defenses and beating top guys. But a lot of those guys just come and go. But Matthew seemed to do better for longer. And I can't think of anybody else who came back from the beatings that he did to win a fight time after time after time.
You know, and I, you know what I came up with? And you, it may surprise you, but I thought of three fighters, current fighters, and they're women.
Okay.
Amanda Serrano.
Right. Yeah, she's good.
Natasha Jonas.
Yep.
And also Heather Heyer.
Yeah, sure.
They have great skill.
Yeah, women's boxing has really evolved over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. You remember what it was like 15 years ago when, they couldn't fight at all. The skill level was so poor. It was just, you know, not even like Golden Glove level. But really, they've gotten much better and oftentimes put on very good fights. Amanda Serrano is very good. Katie Taylor is very good. There's some very good female
boxers. Yeah, I forgot Katie Taylor. Oh, God, yeah.
Very good, yeah.
And I know there are a lot of people out there listening right now who are probably still critical, because I get little comments from time to time about, you know, why you look at women's boxing? Oh, women shouldn't fight and all that. And I said, why not? Why not? And these are the same comments I get. I get comments too about, why do you look at the WNBA? Why do you look at women's, you know? And it's all the sexism. It gets down to that. It gets down
to that.
You know, they don't really look at these fights. But back to the book, I'm just, you know, the thing that, you know, that impresses me, how you detail the fights in a way that makes you, if you've never, and listen, you've got to get the book, because, listen, you know, you want to go and look at the fight, the way you detail it. You don't go like blow by blow, but you do it in a way, and I really am impressed by that, because other boxing books, folks will go blow by blow as far as the rounds and all, but you do it in a way it's like, man, I got to see this. I got to see what actually happened. And
that's a nice.
I mean, that's something. That is really amazing how you did that. But what, you know, have you, I know, you know, I don't want to give away the story and all the story about Matthew, but has the Deloach family, I think you said they contacted you, but since the book has been out, have they said anything, or are they continually kind of staying away from it?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to involve them. It was important to me to involve them because I wanted the whole story as much as I could get.
Right.
And I spoke to two of Matthew's sisters. I think the last two that are alive, and they considered participating in the book, or one of them did, and decided against it. And one of them, in fact, asked me what gave me the right to write the book. And that just,
wow.
I think the problem was that that family comes off badly in the story, right? And they probably heard that for the last 40 years since the story came out, right? And they're tired of I don't know, maybe feeling like they shouldn't have to defend themselves. But I kind of saw it as I wanted to get their side of it.
Right.
And you know what, Greg, I don't mind sharing a little bit of his personal story.
Okay, go right ahead.
Okay, so if you're wondering what we're dancing around here, folks, Matthew's personal story was his biological mother was a severe alcoholic, and she gave birth to Matthew and several other children in rapid succession over just a few years. One of the babies died, and then there were twins, and then a couple more came after that, and nobody knew who the fathers were. Fathers didn't stick around. There were two allegedly, then they didn't stick around. And because she was so badly addicted to alcohol, I guess, her family, her sisters and her parents, mainly took over watching the children. Matthew went and rescued the children, Rodney and his sisters. And Matthew went to live with one of his aunts while his mother was still alive, but unable to care for them. And because she had enough of her own problems and her own kids and no money, right, living in a slum, she sent Matthew out with his older brother, Rodney, and told Rodney, go out and lose him and don't come back with him, or it'll be you who's going out getting lost. So Rodney took Matthew out when Matthew was four in the streets of Philadelphia, South Philly, and ran away from him. And Matt just had to walk around at 4 years old looking for his brother. And he was eventually found. The police took him in, and they put an ad in the paper the next day and said this boy was found wandering the parkway in Philly. And if he's sure to come and get him. And nobody responded to the ad, naturally. And then he was taken in by the church there and spent some time in foster homes and an orphanage until being adopted by a family that lived in South Philly. And then after that time, when Matthew was a little older, his mother died as a result of her alcoholism. I think a lot of people who know bits and pieces of that story always assume that he was living with his aunt because his mother died. But that's not true. She was alive when he went to live with his aunt, and she was still alive when he was abandoned in Philadelphia. She died again later after... Yeah. From her alcoholism. And there's one thing I think I touched on in the book that I want to stress here. Most people, when they hear this story, they say, oh, how can a mother do that to her child? And then about his aunt, oh, how could an aunt send her nephew out into the streets like that? And I share those feelings. But why are we giving the fathers a break here?
Yeah. Where are
the fathers? Yeah, exactly. The fathers created those children and disappeared. And they had to be aware that Matthew's mother was not well, right? She was already poverty stricken and clearly an alcoholic and an addict. And they just did what they wanted to do and split. And they have to bear the responsibility. I would hope that at some point, I hope whoever Matthew's biological father was, I hope he became aware that Matthew became a success in his life.
I hope so.
Yeah, I do, right? And I just think that we're very hard on the women in these stories. But the men who created these people really need to bear some of the blame as well, or most of the blame, in my view.
And that's why the title, and did you come up with the title, The Miracle, Boxing's Miracle Man? Because it's a miracle.
Matthew's nickname during his fighting days was Miracle Matthew.
That's right.
Yeah, because of his fighting, right? But his whole life is kind of, right?
And always just in the interviews I remember seeing, so friendly.
Yeah,
I mean, very friendly. Brutally beating by, Yaki Lopez, beaten by so many folks, even after Kwa Wee beat him. Still mm-hmm. friendly.
Yeah,
so friendly during the interview. Just so friendly, and you brought up a person when you mentioned the Kwa Wee fight at the time, Dwight Braxton, or Rock Newman, because I knew Rock Newman, yep. I knew him, yep. And we
personally,
I knew Rock Newman.
Oh, because he was in D.C. You were producing.
Yeah,
right.
he was on WOL radio, and I got to know him, and we had a little, you know, I really like, as I've been saying, I really like Matthew, but I was telling him about Braxton. I said, you got to watch this guy.
Really?
Yeah, I said, you got to watch, because I saw him fight Scott in Rahway. I saw that fight, right. And they showed it on ABC Wide World of Sports from Rahway. And he said, you got to watch this guy. And he didn't want to believe me. And that's what led to, and that's why when I read the book and you brought up that, you know, Rob kind of changed his mind after the fight and all that. I remember that
right.
time. I remember why he changed his mind. And he was also a car deal. He had Ford dealership. He was a
that
car
right?
dealer. And that's how he ended up giving Dwight a call.
Right. Okay. Right. Right. That's right. Yep. Yep. Interesting.
You know,
it's funny. I didn't know any of that about Rock Newman until I started researching the book. Of course, I knew him from his association with Riddick Bowe.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a story in itself. That all I'll say is that I hope Riddick gets his money or gets some money. I hope Riddick is being taken care of. That's, you know.
It doesn't. it doesn't appear to me that he is terribly well. But I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I don't know what went on with his money. I know that his wife got a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know what Newman's role in that was.
That's a story in itself. All I know is, like, what you talk about with other people, with Matthew, Saad, Muhammad, that people come in, they take advantage of folks, get the money, and the product that they're pushing, the fighter, is left alone. And that's all.
Yeah.
I'll leave it as that. It's a shame. But I could talk to you about boxing all day. I'm gonna have to get you back on.
That's fun. Anytime.
You know, I want to get you back on here. I want to, I'm glad, you know, as you know, this show, even though I always tell folks, we talk about actual boxing and all, but we do simulations on here. And I'm happy that you did said that I should simulate a fight between Saad Muhammad and Ezra Charles, which I won't give you the results.
Yeah.
I won't give you that yet on air, but, you know, you will see it. You will definitely see that.
Okay.
But I wanted to add, you know, just to change a little bit, still talking about boxing, what do you think about the whole thing? Because as we're speaking right now in Saudi Arabia, there's going to be the knockout or chaos fight. What do you think about the Saudis, what they're doing now in boxing? Is it actually revitalizing boxing? Do you think there's something else going on there?
It's both.
The
Saudis are engaging in sports washing. In an attempt to gain favor with the sporting world and the rest of the world at large. So they're not viewed upon the way they are by the rest of the civilized world because of their human rights record.
Right.
They're so backward, right? They're so backward in so many ways, and their record on human rights is despicable. And so they're engaging in sports washing and bringing all these great fights over there because they've got all this money to spend.
Yeah.
So that's not an especially moral route to take, right? We would hope that they would improve their human rights record first, right? But the thing about boxing is boxing doesn't care about human rights records.
It's the problem,
right? That's just the way it is. That's just boxing. Boxing will go wherever the money is. And they've got all the money. They've got plenty of money. And so boxing will go where the money is. And you see all these big fights getting made that maybe wouldn't have gotten made if there wasn't all the money that the Saudis have. So it's just, if you know what, you have to accept boxing for what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
You and I know. I mean, I've read the studies over the years. I've had a number of books about, you know, the brutality of boxing, what it does, but I can't. It's my favorite sport to watch.
Yeah.
Since I was 5 years old looking at Floyd Patterson. I mean, I've always loved
it. Yeah.
I didn't want to fight myself because I would start crying, got hit. But I didn't want to fight, but but I love looking at it. But it's
I'm with
something.
you. Yeah, and you know what? It gets not only for fighters, but for people who, like you, who start watching when they're kids. It gets in your blood, and you can't
Yeah.
stop. You just can't get rid of it. And
No, I mean.
so boxing really is the wild west of sports, and it's going to go where the money is, and it's going to be corrupt, and you have to just put all that shit aside, and concentrate on what's happening when two guys fight in the ring,
Yeah.
and you just focus on that. There's nothing like it. It just
There's
isn't. Not
nothing.
for a lot of us, there isn't. I don't
No.
know.
It's the, like over here, I mean, I really have gotten into Muay Thai boxing, fighting. But I have, and I want to ask your opinion on this. I was meaning, from knowing about you over the years, and what do you think of MMA? Because I've gone to a number of those bouts when I was in the States. I really can't get into it like boxing.
I have the same exact reaction as you. I'd like to become a fan.
Yeah.
I'd like to cover it because believe me, there's a lot more money available in writing about MMA right now than boxing. So from a selfish perspective, I'd like to be able to get into it and feel about it the way I do boxing, but I just can't.
I
I
don't know what
can't.
it
I know
is.
there, you know, yeah, there. I know that it there's those guys are very skilled and very tough guys. They're getting their faces banged up just like boxers do, and they're getting caught up in matches and all this stuff. I get it. And most of the time, they're not even wrestling anymore. They're just standing and punching like boxing.
Right.
But I still can't get into it. I don't know. I just can't. So I'm like you, Greg. I can't get into it.
And like I said, I've been, in fact, over here, besides doing the Muay Thai, I actually went to this thing called the one fight. They call it the one. And it's one of the major MMA tournaments in the world. And I just, had center stage seats and all, got invited to go to this thing, and I just could not. I can't really get into it like boxing. I tried, but I
Yeah,
just
I'm with
can't.
you. I'm right with you. I know.
I don't know what it is. But anyway, yeah, like I said, I could talk to you all day about this. We're gonna get you back on. But what's since you've done the last two books have been on light heavyweight boxers. I was trying to figure out, the other day, now who would he do next? So since he did Ezra Charles from the 50s, Saad Muhammad, 70s and 80s, who would be the next target of light heavyweight later on? And
Well,
I
to
must,
be honest with you, it's
yeah,
just a coincidence that happened to be
okay.
light heavyweights. There was no plan there to do light
Okay,
heavyweights.
because I was trying to figure out who would be the next on the agenda for that. But is there, what's, do you have a target coming up as far as your next book, or is it just going to be continuing to write, get the great publication of Ringside Seats out?
I've got something in the works that I can't mention yet because it's not a done deal yet. And
Okay.
there's another biography I'd really like to write, and about a fighter who has had no biographies written about him yet. But I probably won't do it because there's a language barrier, and it's a Spanish fighter who's never been written about, who's loved, but I don't speak any Spanish, and that would be a real impediment to me writing the book. So that's kind of a drag. But just in case I end up doing it, I'm not going to say his name because I don't want somebody else to do it. But so I really can't say anything to more than that. I will say that having written these two biographies on Ezra Charles and Matthew Saad Muhammad, and knowing pretty much the stories of just about all the famous fighters over the last 100 years, there's a real pattern, right, that emerges.
Right.
And these fighters all have kind of the same story. They really do. The details change, but they came to areas from the South during the Great Migration and lived in slums and took up boxing as a way to get out of the slums. And it did that for them, right? And then if they didn't go back to the slums, they didn't really keep all their money either. And things ended badly, but things end badly for everybody. There are very few happy endings for most of us, right?
Yeah.
But for fighters in particular, is this a pattern to the lives of boxers? They're very much alike.
Yeah, you know, and I have to say that too about same thing with the Muay Thai fighters over here. They start them early. I mean, you're talking about you got kids by the time they're like 15 have had like 300 or more fights.
Wow.
And they're done by the time if they make 20, they're lucky. And you rarely see a 30-year-old Muay Thai fighter.
Really?
And and the women that get in it, they don't last that long either. And it's a fascinating sport. It's just fascinating. It's
I don't know
really
anything about it. Is there head trauma in Muay Thai?
it has to be obviously, but over, I mean, over here, they don't really discuss it. But and it, I've looked at them with enough fights, and you would, you know, if you saw a fight, you'd say it's obvious they got to have that. But they don't have any studies that I've seen on it. They won't talk about it. But it's obvious. In
Okay.
fact, they have this type of fighting. I saw these two women do it, and it's probably the most brutal thing I've ever seen. Whereas
Wow.
rather than using gloves, they had these two women put rope around, I forget the name of what they call it, but they put rope around their fists.
Really?
And they put the
And they
rope,
put each other in the
yes, and they're
head,
battling.
right?
And it's,
Okay.
I've never, it is brutal. And it's a special, you know, and they just blow up. I mean, the minute they hit each other, they blow up immediately. It's brutal. It's the worst thing I've ever seen, but I was just fascinated sitting there looking at it.
Of
You know,
course.
it's amazing. That's something, you know. Well, boxing, for folks that love boxing, we're a different breed. We're a whole different world.
Sure.
But William, I want to thank you again. And how, if anyone wants to contact you, how can they do so?
They can email me at my last name, detloff@ptd.net, or they can get in touch with me on Twitter. They can follow me on Twitter at William Detloff. Facebook is Bill Detloff, or my Ringside Seat magazine email address, Ringside Seat Mag. So any number of ways. And thank you for plugging the magazine. We try to do a good job. That's a quarterly magazine and the last print boxing magazine left in the United States.
Yeah, you know, and I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Although I have to say honestly, because I'm over here, I can only get the digital.
Okay, right. That's kind of a drag, but you're still able to enjoy the articles and you're still
Oh
able
yeah.
to enjoy the
Great,
design
great,
and
great
like
magazine.
that. Yeah.
Great magazine. But thank you so
Thank you.
much. We'll stay in
My
touch.
pleasure.
Thank you for coming on today. You take care,
My
Bill.
pleasure.
Thank you so
You
much.
too.
Really enjoyed talking to Bill today on the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. And we will have him on again today. Again, I like to have him on again. And we can talk all day after, but we'll have him on the show again. But please pick up the book, William Detloff. It's Boxing's Miracle Man, Matthew Saad Muhammad. It is on the McFarland Press. Also, get a subscription to Ringside Magazine. Just check that out. Ringside Seat Magazine. I'm sorry. Ringside Seat Magazine. Great magazine and just great guy to talk to. Hope you enjoyed that interview. As I said, the second part of the show will be the fight between Issa Charles and Matthew Saad Muhammad. But you'll have to go to my website to hear that on the YouTube channel. Wherever you listen to this program, where you listen in this interview today, we'll have the second part of the show. But again, Greg Rashid, and I want to say go in love, go in peace. Help someone along the way, wherever you are in this world, do what you can. And when you wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, hug yourself, and say, I love myself. And if you're sight impaired, get up, hug yourself, and you say, I love myself. Because if you don't love yourself, you can't love anyone. You can't do anything. So do what you can to make this a better world. We're all on this sphere together. So do what you can to help someone. But again, this is Greg Rashid. Go in love, go in peace. We'll see you next time on the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. and tune in for the part two edition of this show where we have the simulated fight between Charles and Saad Muhammad. So take care.
Thanks for tuning in, my friends. See you next time for another edition of the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. Please don't forget to like, share, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. Thanks.